Welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast. In this
Your mom's a podcast. Yeah, Your Mom's a Podcast.
Here we interview incredible people and their moms to be like, excuse me, how did you do it?
I'm Sandeep Parikh, you're
Milana Weintraub.
And we're both two LA-based comedians and actors, and we're also new parents, and we need help.
So we're going to talk to people who are incredible and inspiring and change the world, crack us up, all of the above.
And learn to be better parents, and also learn to have some compassion for our parents.
Yeah, who maybe did some things a little wonky or a little perfect, because look at us, we turned out to be perfect people.
So welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast. This is going to be my check-in.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's our check-in, but this is what I'm talking
about. No, let's make it about you. That's fine.
No. I think a lot about generational stuff because I got this little duder.
Uh-huh.
And like, there's only going to be, right now, we're thinking we're just one and done, potentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that there's no redundancy here. Like, he could be the final Parikh, at least that spawns from my side of the
Parikhness.
Parikhness, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have brothers, so they have passed the name down or whatever. But are you one and done? Do you think about
we think about it all the time?
Yeah,
we literally think about it all the time. I mean, first of all, being a working mom is a scam. It's not a thing that is actually possible.
You a scam perpetrated by who?
The motherhood industry, the work industry, capitalism. To think that you can actually
capitalism's always a scammer.
It's always to blame.
Yeah.
But it is. Impossible. I mean, yeah. Shonda Rhimes has this famous graduation, what's it called when you give a graduation speech?
Commencement speech.
Thank you. And she says in it, like, there is no doing both. When I am figuring out a script for Grey's Anatomy, I'm missing bath time. And so that makes it harder to even think about, you know, adding another life to the mix. Because when you have a kid, you're already doubling your life. You're already saying, I'm going to live all of my time and I'm going to live all of your time. Like there's just not enough time to be both people, to be everything to myself and to this other person and then to add another person. However, this interview that we did today really made me think about the value of siblings and just the impact that people have in your life that aren't just your parents. And
that's right.
I know this has always been obvious to us because I think, you know, we've been really influenced by friends and teachers and even characters on TV for sure. Like Bob Saget did a lot for me, for my moral compass.
Oh, but Kimmy Gibbler more for me, but yeah.
I can see that, yeah. I can see that in your style choices.
She was the hero of the whole story, right?
Well, just that giving your kid a sibling is such a gift.
Right.
And I feel that way about my sister now, and I know you feel that way about your brothers.
But the piece that I'm more worried about is like the long term, like what happens after we pass and it's just him. And like, I feel like there's so much value, like especially talking to our guest today, you know, there's, when you know, she had a strange relationship with her family, as you'll find out more about. But like
with her mom,
with her mom, and but at least they have a really strong relationship with her brother, right? And you're like, like no matter how it shakes out, you like no one else will have me as a dad other than obviously who I produce, and so like that is a special thing that even if like they're not on the same page about stuff, even if they don't have always the best relationship, they will always have that in common, that specific relationship between, you know, that them and their parents.
That shared history and that shared experience of you. Yeah.
That they can like grouse about and like relate to each other about and, you know, have each other's backs about. Because I'm mess things up.
Of course you are. And so am I. And so is everybody. And then we also work on repairing. And that's just the way every relationship works, honestly. Every intimate relationship, every close relationship, every friendship, you mess up and then you work on repairing. And sometimes the repairing is more powerful than if the mess up never happened at all. Even more, it brings you even closer.
Yeah.
So yes, I think that will happen. And then also, I know lots of really great only children who are interesting and then who really see their friends as their family and I recently talked to a woman who's an only child who has two children, and she was like, the problem with me is that I think everything I say is interesting. and I think that that's a really right. funny symptom of only children. I'm not sure if that's universal, but I think that was a funny thing to her. Yeah.
Like, you know, like I was the funniest child. I was the smartest child. I mean, I was an only child, but I was the absolute best.
You know, not getting all of your parents' attention all the time is probably healthy and preparing of the world learning to share. And then also having a buddy. I mean, hopefully they're buddies. Who's to say? There were also moments in our guests' childhood where they were absolute enemies. So, but right now they are each other's primary family in a lot of ways. So anyway, thanks for listening to this episode of Your Mom is a Podcast. If you got the time, please follow the podcast on whatever app you choose and rate it 5 stars and Apple, Spotify, whatever.
And this is a very special episode. So I think you're going to dig this one. Special because this one, we don't have a mom for the mom part, because we think mom is sort of a generalized term. It's more of like your family is a podcast. It's whoever feels like is a nurturing figure in your life. That's who we wanted to interview for our guest today. And so the interview, the pre-interview was done with her brother, Jeff Astroff, who is a TV producer.
He was an EP on Veronica's Closet, New Adventures of Old Christine. He got his start as a story editor and producer on Friends. He really started in the golden age of writing television, where you could make a really good living. Jealous. Okay. And then our guest today is the brilliant producer. She's a working mom. She's written a lot about being a working mom. Her book is called Stay at Work Mom, Marriage, Kids, and Other Disasters. She's one of the most successful sitcom writers in television today, although you will hear shortly that she would not refer to herself as successful.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, sorry. Big one. She created Fox's Pivoting. She's worked on King of Queens, Raising Hope, Two Broke Girls. She's an award-winning executive producer. She lives in Los Angeles, California with her husband and 2 kids.
Let's jump in to our interview with Liz Astroff. Just kind of jumping into the format of the podcast, right? Like, we want you slash, you know, the person that you feel like most influenced you in the creation of Liz. So to tell us the story of you. So we interviewed your brother, your older brother, Jeff, which was a phenomenal interview that Milana did. And the whole thing is that we have his answers ready to play back to you. But we're going to ask you, you know, we're going to say, hey, look, we asked Jeff this question, and then have you guess as to what you think, how you think he answered it.
Okay.
And then because I'm a gamery guy, I like points, so I'm going to be giving you a gold star if you match or not. The gold stars are pretty much meaningless. I guess we're going to have a tally of our guests at some point and their gold stars. But, you know, so I don't know how competitive you are, Liz.
Not as competitive as he is, but he makes me want to upset him.
Okay, great. Perfect. Then it'll work great.
The irony of this is that Sandeep doesn't really believe in points or rewards with his own kid.
No,
he believes in intrinsic motivation.
Yeah, but for game shows, I believe in points and motivations.
Whereas I could not care more about points or games, and I just want to go deep. So let's just talk, and Sandeep will do his own thing on the side, and we can pay attention to him or not.
My brother could not care more about points, and he remembers the word he got wrong in the spelling, national spelling bee. When he was 10.
Sorry, Milana, you're saying you couldn't care less.
I don't care about points. I don't care about points, but my brother does, which makes me care because I want to beat him.
So there you go. Great.
Good.
As long as there is a vendetta of some sort, this show is going to be great.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about your relationship with Jeff. What's that like?
Jeff and I are best friends, and we actually have such a codependent relationship that I'm doing a pilot for UTV that is, I wanted to do it about one thing, and they said, no, we want it to be about you and your brother, because they know him. And we're the couple in the marriages. Like, our our spouses are on the outside and the two of us have our own like language and our own thing, and we're horrible influences on each other, and our spouses have to absorb our crazy. But so when we were very little, we had to fend for ourselves with my mom, and he was very protective of me. And if I could say how bleak it was, but he used to, when she would go on her rampages, he would yell, "Head for the bomb shelters," and we would run under my bed. I'd meet him wherever I was under my bed.
Oh, wow.
I know. So then we would drag the rotary phone under the bed and call my dad in Manhattan, and he would come home with donuts, which is part of my sugar addiction. So then whenever we would leave each other to go out of under the bed, like if we had to go to the bathroom, we would say safe, safe. We'd say safe, 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 safe. So now every time we do something, we'll say safe getting notes from NBC, even though I already got a call saying it's not great. Safe getting a call for notes from NBC, even though you already got a call. Like we say safe, safe, safe flight, though the guy behind me just made plans for later. Safe flight, even though the guy. So we do that stuff all the time. And then safe, safe is like, you know, but there were those years after my mom left and my stepmother moved in where Jeff and I hated each other. We fought like crazy, and he is an evil genius, and he teases me, and he has been pranking me before pranks were even a thing. I mean, his pranks were genius and so upsetting that he still does them. And to this day, I will be like, "I'm telling," and I'll have Todd call him and be like, "Can you tell Jeff to stop it? Stop. I'm serious, Jeff, stop it." And he'll tease me, and he does these things that are so smart but so mean. And he did those things my entire, like from the time he tortured me from the time I was like 10 until he left for college. And then after college, we were a little bit closer. And then he lived in LA and I lived in New York, and he came to visit, and he was like, "You should become a comedy writer." And I've always wanted to be, but I didn't think I was like smart enough. According to him, I was very, very not smart. he used a word that you can't use now a lot. And, I'm not as smart as he is. So he got me to move out here eventually. And then we became really, really close. And since then we've been best friends.
Okay. Let's hear what Jeff said.
Oh.
Liz and I became very, very close friends, when we were adults. I think growing up, I had the movie Welcome to the Dollhouse is a pretty good representation of that. I was kind of like the nerdy kid who picked on his sister a lot. I picked on her, but I did protect her because we did have there was a lot of contention growing up in the house, and there was a lot of fighting. So I wound up taking care of her a lot when the parents weren't around.
Gold star,
that's a point.
Thank you.
Done and protected. Yeah, for sure. Welcome to Dollhouse is amazing.
Oh my God. That paints a clear picture.
So what was your parents' relationship like?
My real parents? Horrible. My dad and my biological mother, violent. She would not feed us and do things like that. Or she fed us from a supermarket and then put the boxes back. Like she stole a lot. She like left a lot while we were home. And my dad protected us. But had to come home from work many times. They're horrible. Their relationship was horrible.
And what about your stepmom?
Our relationship, I was very close with my stepmom when she first came along, because she was like really clean and really pretty and really young. And I worshipped her, and then got worse when I got to be like 10 or 11. And then that's when I love her so much, but that's when you really need someone that can look at you when you look your worst and still love you. Really still can, not be disgusted by you. So we had a lot of contention when I was a teenager, a lot, because she was really there for my dad, not me, which she should be, but she inherited these two broken kids. Jeff's relationship with her was contentious, I think, in the beginning. We've never really been close with her, but she tried her best to raise us well.
Yeah. I mean, it just shows tons of self-awareness to be able to even point that out, like that need that you had.
Looking back now, I feel for her so much, because I couldn't imagine my kids not being part of me and me being kind to them, because
yes.
And me having to be saddled with them. I mean, I don't like it. It just, it probably sucked for her. But it's also, I was a kid and I didn't know better, and everything started out so bad. And it was an odd, there was not a lot of comfort in my house.
I totally get that. Cause like, even at the playground, I'm like, and this other kid, like, screw this other kid.
Yes. Oh, I get into fights with kids all the time. I get into fights with kids. I am not afraid.
My kid could be a demon, and I'm like, yeah. Hey, man, I'm here for you. I get it. Like, you know, you're going through some you know,
right. Or he's never
having
like
some
this.
Big feelings.
He's never yeah. like this. It was your. I've gotten into fights with kids at the because I'm like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do as a mother. Because even though our stepmother
Same.
Was, yeah, it's scary. And our stepmother was not maternal. She didn't have her own kids, so she wasn't maternal and warm, and that's not her fault. She did everything she should do for us, but I didn't have like hugs and stuff like that, and it's not her fault.
Let's play what Jeff said about your parents' relationship.
They were married up until I was 10 oh. and Liz was 6, and that was very, 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 it was not good at all. It was a very hostile marriage. Like, I talked to a friend of mine about being forged in fire. That was the fire. So that's really, really lucky that we survived that. And my dad got out of that marriage, and he married a stepmom who was, again, she was younger. So I think that was hard on her. She didn't have kids of her own, and you know, she did her best raising us. And that was a lot more peace. And I think that was a large reason why we wound up being, you know, even remotely human.
Yeah, I love that you laughed at, well, they were married.
Because I thought that's where he was going to end.
We actually considered cutting it off right there. But no, I think, so for me, definite gold star there. Hostile, horrible. So, you know, I guess that's a consolation prize for you.
The hostile. We both said hostile?
Well, horrible and hostile, and they both begin with H. So I think, you know, it's good enough for me.
Nice.
Save big money at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. We have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Get free estimates fast using our easy do-it-yourself landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape products at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit JDPower.com for details and Menards.com for deals. Save big.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's shift to something like kind of, you know, more positive. So I love the forged in fire metaphor.
Yeah.
I think if nothing else, this is a story of resilience for me. You know, hearing all about you. So, what would you say is a positive trait that you both share, you and Jeff?
Our sense of humor. We're very into gallows humor, and we'll say things like, "How old were you when your parents, when your dad beat you with a shoe at Shoe Town?" Or "How old were you when your mom kidnapped you or pulled your hair? Oh, when did you guys go to a supermarket jail with your mom? How old were you?" Like, we just tell stories like that. Like, we die laughing over the worst, like, most abusive situations.
Can I take a quick little detour to supermarket jail real quick?
Yes.
Yeah. What is that? And how does that happen? I mean, you kind of alluded to your mom feeding you out of a supermarket and then putting the boxes back. Is that what leads to supermarket jail?
Yeah. It's always fuzzy, okay. But we have never left an establishment where money should be exchanged without her having a screaming fit and getting in, having to go to the back office and us having to stand there like in our puffy coats, like in Long Island, like at 7 o'clock at night when we haven't eaten. I also think that's why I eat so much. I always order two orders of everything, so I don't feel like, because I have abandonment issues. So I know that there will be more because there was never a surplus of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I just, without therapy, just figured that out.
Wow. Yeah. There was a moment where I stole as a kid from a supermarket.
Oh my God, me too.
But I was maybe like 4 or 5.
Oh.
and I was with my grandfather. Well, I mean, I think I've stolen because it was also a part of the way that I was raised in some way. But I was like 4 or 5 and we left this, I stole some chapstick cause I like wanted lipstick and I was with my grandfather. We get home and instead of having a conversation with me that I think I would have with my son, I think it would be like, hey, so, we know that you stole the chapstick and I think it's time for us to go back and give it back. And then we can talk about the value of money and morals. No, I got home and my grandfather and my mom sat me down and said, the police are coming. We know what happened. They know what happened and they're coming to take you to jail. And basically, it's awful, but I cried and I was like, no, give it back.
They tried scared straight for a 4-year-old?
Yeah.
Wow. And have you stolen since?
Yeah. And then I continued stealing. Like, there was nothing effective about it. I was just like, well, now I won't get caught.
Yeah, once you learn that it's not true, then you're like, wait, I can't trust anything.
Sure. Exactly. And that's actually a big part of my parenting now, even though my kid is, you know, just a nothing kid right now. I'm really trying to not lie to him because I have so much distrust of all authority generally, actually.
Right. Oh, that's so interesting.
Also, 4 and 5 is a tough time. Like, how conscious were you that you were stealing at that
age? You're kind of testing. It would seem like that's mine.
I knew. I was fucking smart. So
you were smart.
I was so smart.
Yeah, that's
okay,
wild.
Let's see what Jeff said is this positive trait that you share.
We worked very, very hard. I think we're both intelligent and we're both wicked funny. But I think we're both funny and I think we both mask a lot of our pain and anxiety with humor.
Yeah, that was... It's going sideways for a second, but you pulled out and get a third gold star.
Smart. I've never gotten smart. I'm going to tell him about that. Wow.
You're going to tell him that he said that you were smart?
Yes.
Yeah. We could send you this clip if you ever want to just play it back in his face.
Smart.
Download it so that it's his ringtone.
Yes. I am going to do that. His ringtone.
So what do you think it is about your upbringing that made you and Jeff both funny adults?
Oh, it was the only way. Well, I grew up absorbed in sitcoms. I just watched 80s sitcoms until my eyes bled. That was my family. And I think that him too. We used to watch The Honeymooners and recite along in like a contest kind of way. But I think it's just the only way to get through. I'm always shocked that when people say like, that's so traumatic. And it was kind of normal for me, but I think it's because of our sense of humor. Like that's the only way to, I don't want to get sympathy from people. And, but I do have these stories that I thought were normal. So I would tell them in the room and people in a comedy room and people would be horrified. And then, and even with that kind of humor. So
yeah,
so I think it's definitely because of the trauma. 100%. And also, I mean, there are funny people in our family, but not really.
So trauma and sitcoms, I think is trauma, fair sitcoms, to say here.
And yes.
Trauma plus time
equals comedy. Yes. Or death. But but we would also, the way we bonded was to talk about our parents make jokes about the trauma. Like, remember the time? Things like that.
This is one of the reasons that I kind of like right now I only have the one, but like, one of the reasons I'm thinking, oh man, I'm doing a real disservice to my little one to not have a sibling, right? Is that they're the only ones that will ever have experienced us as parents in that relationship. So it's like to have nobody to bounce that off of other than a therapist, I feel like is a bummer.
Okay, let's hear what Jeff said made you guys funny as adults.
Yeah, she's so smart and so funny, but I think it's growing up being, you know, second fiddle. She was in my shadow. I was always kind of the golden child. Even in a broken family, we had a good extended family, like aunts and uncles, and my grandmother was a big figure in our lives. So people say, oh, wow, that must have been really funny, your house. And I think it's the exact opposite of that. I think it was, you know, again, I want to be careful because I really love and respect my dad for doing what he could to raise us. But I think it was the trauma. You know, we could have been both either been in prison or, you know, picking up trash on the side of the road, or, so to speak, successful comedy writers. I don't think there was any in between for us. I don't think there was going to be that, like, oh yeah, Jeff, he became a pretty good tax attorney.
Yeah. Okay. Obvious gold star there. Again, winning points for trauma.
I'm so excited. Yeah. Drama wins again. They say love wins, but drama wins.
No.
Yeah. Cheat code is trauma. Please. If in doubt, pick trauma.
Are you sort of aware of ways in which you might, you know, favor one or the other? How does that sort of carry forward with you as a parent now?
Well, now I'm like, well, she's my favorite. She'll be something. You know what? Yeah. I think he's my favorite again.
Well, so you vacillate. That's good.
Yeah. Oh, all the time. It's yes. I vacillate. And then when there's no one, I get really mad at them because I'm like, I have no one right now. I have no one. But I do.
Why don't you be my favorite, please?
Please just do something. But I do tell them because they live parallel lives. Like they fight and they, not like my brother and I, like knock down, drag out. They're like a married couple who need to get divorced because they bicker constantly. But I do tell them all the time. I said, you are not going to want to deal with me alone.
Mm.
So you don't think you're going to get along now, but you are going to only have each other. The shared history of me and my craziness. And then they get upset that I'm not going to be lucid forever. And that's also interesting to me that, like, you know, when I'm going to die, and they cry, and then I'm like, why are you sad?
Why would you be sad about the death of your mother?
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Wow.
So maybe a good time to ask this question that we asked Jeff: what's a parenting goal that you both share? And then follow up, what's a philosophy in which you're different?
The parenting goal we both share is to not screw our kids up as much as our parents did us. I would think to not behave the way our parents did, to fight every single urge to behave the way they did to our kids, which we won't do, but we do feel like is ingrained in us, but we don't do that. And I think our philosophies are very different. And I don't know if this is where the religion comes in, but he's raising his kids in a very religious, he's an Orthodox Jew. I'm sure he told you that. And he raises his kids to be very religious, and there's no common ground there between us, really. I mean, we're both Jewish, but there's a big divide in the track that their kids are on and the tracklessness that my kids are on.
Like, how do you deal with faith at all?
Yeah, oh, us? Well, okay. So here's an example. We're Reform, and I hated going to temple growing up. I hated it. Hated going to Hebrew school. I would always, and the thing my husband and I bonded over is how we would both like pretend we had just had an aneurysm or fall into a coma right before Hebrew school. And then now we made them go to Hebrew school because our dads wanted them to. And they had an amazing experience because they went to a really laid back school with a female rabbi and cantor, and they loved it. And we, you know, we celebrate the holidays traditionally. We usually go to family, but not Jeff, because it's like a 7-hour thing. And also because they're so much more religious and it's boring. But we do, like, we're more traditional Jews. I'm very happy that we have each other. You know, I'm very proud, I guess, to be Jewish, but we don't stick to any of those like Shabbat rules or anything like that. So we're just looser. We're much looser. But
right, it's more the culture of it and the holidays and being and like ascribing yourself
the traditions.
To the identity. Yeah. So we kind of hit three questions here inadvertently. Why don't we play the tape on? So you said the goal that you both share was sort of basically acting differently than your parents and ensuring that it's not. That you're not going to screw your kids up in the same way that they did for you.
Right. We'll screw them up.
You screw them up in a different way.
Different way.
Yeah. Okay, great. Let's play that.
I think we have the goal of being very, very present parents to our own kids. And sometimes that's, I think in both of our cases, that's more of a negative than a positive for the kids.
Okay, so I would say no star there.
No star.
No star, yeah.
Wow.
But
it is
I bet that's kind of what you meant about behaving differently. Is that fair to say?
Yes. But I understand the lack of the gold star, but that is true because we both like are like white knuckling it through because we're not neglecting our kids.
do you ever find yourself like, oh, I'm totally pulling a mom here or a dad here in a way that I don't like and I got to pull back? Like, how do you sort of navigate that in the moment?
When I yell, I remember one time I was screaming at my son and I'm such a yeller, but I realized in this moment that, and I was like, do I just go for it and just be my dad? Do I just, because he was a yeller and he was scary, and do I just go for it? Or do I like pull back? And I was screaming at my son and I looked at my daughter and she was looking at me and I thought she was, her voice, face crinkled up. And I just thought, I just destroyed everything. I just ruined everything. Mm. And she burst into hysterical laughter. And that was when I realized that she is, no one is afraid of me. And it was the best feeling because it wasn't, it, I could never be like them. And I had already assured them that they could never be, they would never be afraid of me. I mean, she doesn't even take me at all seriously, but I'm definitely a yeller. When people are yelling, I get triggered. Like if my husband yells, I get very triggered and want to run under the bed, even though he's just yelling. I feel a little bit like an alien in a family, to be honest.
I love this idea of I could never be like them already, like inherently, even if I did something that was similar to what they did, my relationship with my kids, the way that I look at the world, the decisions I've made, the therapy I've done, the podcasts I've listened to have made it so that I am already never going to be like them.
No. And it's very, it, those moments of reassurance are so great. And I think I'm past that, but I also have my own things. Like my mother never finished anything, starting with raising us, but she never finished. She didn't even
That's a good one. Yeah, is that written down somewhere? That's a good one. Please write that down.
I will, but I should, but if I get to it, but she,
if I get to it,
even like I was 2 months early because my twin sister died. So it was like, she never finished anything. So I'm so driven by that. And also
she didn't finish her pregnancy.
She didn't finish her pregnancy. No,
that is dark.
I know. Amazing. She didn't, she was supposed to go on bed rest and she didn't. And my sister died. It was like a show. And that's the last time I was early for anything, I'll be honest. And I feel like I have a good excuse. But she just didn't finish anything. And she started plays. She started writing movies. And she was very talented. But when I don't finish something, it is so triggering because I feel like I'm becoming my mother. But now I can safely say that I'm nothing like her.
Can I ask you something that I am dealing with as a working mom and, you know, what your book is about in many ways is how has your career affected your parenting?
First of all, I use them as muses in everything.
Mm.
It certainly has. And also I have a lot of guilt being a stay-at-work mom. I mean, I've been here now though for what, 4 years? On and off since COVID, 3 years. And now with the strike, that's why I'm like, I'm not supposed to be with you. This isn't my bit. this isn't my character. But there's definitely guilt. But here's what I do with my daughter, and I think this is good advice. When she used to complain that I didn't pick her up from school and other moms did, I would say, well, they're losers. No, I'm kidding. I would say, no, I wouldn't say that at all. I would say, first of all, I'd say, Phoebe, you wouldn't want me to pick you up from school because I wouldn't. Yeah. I said something like, I say, I love you and I love, love, love spending time with you, but I also really love what I do and I need it for me. And hopefully you'll feel the same. I need it for me to be a better mom for you. But also I just say like, I like my job instead of saying, I miss you too. You know, I wish that I didn't have to work. And because then it puts like some kind of burden on them. But I just say, I really like my job and I want you to be proud that I work. So I feel like that was like good. Like I surprised myself.
That hits home so hard.
That is so good.
I am stealing that. I do the like, I wish I didn't have to go to this convention. Like, I think that's so great to be like, because you express it in, it's couched in, I love you. I love you. But I also, I do also love this. And it actually makes me a more present and able to be here when I'm here.
And it's most honest. Sandeep, don't you think that that's most honest for you? Like it definitely is for me. I need to go away. Going to Toronto for 5 days for a job is the best thing I could do for my kid.
I mean, and for her to see me working, which she never wants to, but for her to see that and see, like even seeing my show that I created and you know, she's never really that interested, but even seeing that I created that and seeing her name, she's the end card, is a cartoon kid of a kid, two kids jumping up and down and her going, "Mama, look." And I used her voice.
Oh, that's like your production company card?
Yeah.
Yeah, but cool.
Because my real production company name is Fat Kid Productions and I can't really do that anymore. I feel guilty now that I missed a lot because they were so cute then. But so I feel bad, but I was present a lot and I see pictures of myself with them and I'm really, I know that I'm happy because I was smiling. I'm also shocked that they break my heart. Like if they're upset or something, as school happens, I cry, which I'm like, I don't even cry. Like, where's that coming from? And I just start, I just, the thought of them suffering is awful to me.
Well, I think, you know, we talked about it earlier, right? Where you talked about like why your kid didn't freak out when you got upset is because it's, even though they can't remember the dates and they can't remember the like exact moments, they remember so this feeling, the emotion, the foundational reality that they, you know, that you created safety and security for them.
Totally.
And they, so that's pretty rad. But yeah, let's play the tape.
I don't think that she feels successful at all. Again, a writer, it's unfortunate that you're bound, especially like a sitcom writer, you're bound in this terrible world of when you're working, that just, you're just working. And when you're not, you're an abject failure.
That's true.
Ah, so he challenged the premise of the question that how has success in your career affected your parenting? And so he's basically saying you don't feel successful.
I didn't even hear the word success.
You know, that might have been my fault. I might have just said, how has your career affected your parenting?
Yeah.
And because of that, I get a point deducted.
Yeah, that's a negative gold star for Milana, which I am tracking. Okay.
I would I would say success. Like I don't, as I did when you introduced me, I don't see myself as successful at all. Especially.
Yeah, which is a whole load of horse crap, but we'll move on. I just have to ask you, because you've written so much about your body as a kid and being sent to fat camp and how, you know, you have in your book about being cut out of your bat mitzvah dress.
It's traumatizing.
Of course. And so
I don't try clothes on at stores anymore.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
I buy stuff and then I bring it home. And then I, like the other day though, I did order something from The Real Real that came the other day and it's a skirt that's attached to a shirt and I got stuck in it. And I was like, oh no, there are not two Russian women with scissors here, but I got my way out of it. And I was like, and it fit. So I was very, but that was, you know, there were a lot of shameful, but I always blamed myself for that stuff. So
how did going to fat camp affect your body image?
Oh, terribly, because we were treated in the most, we were prisoners and we were shamed and we were constantly, also there's an article about that camp. There was like a big scandal. I mean, it's basically a scam, and terrible. You know that you're other, you know that, like, I remember one night we were all at the playground and someone yelled, "Hey, fatso." And like, we all turned around so fast, the wind changed. Like it was just what we're used to. It should be a place where kids go, where they can be accepted. But what's interesting is that I was the thinnest and I was bullied for that. Yes. And I was not, you know, it's being told that, and a lot of kids, when I heard the article, when I listened to it, a lot of kids that went there felt like they just wanted to be thin to earn their parents' love. And that's exactly how I felt. So I always feel like that was the only way I could get my parents to love me, because my stepmother was very thin. She's not Jewish. And she was very thin and she could wear the clothes I couldn't. And my dad put so much import on weight and that's your self-worth, that it definitely being sent to fat camp was almost worse than fat camp because of the way they sent me, that I wasn't allowed to live there anymore because I was fat and they couldn't look at me. So I didn't want to be fat.
Can I ask how now you talk about body and food with your kids?
Well, I'm very proud. I did write this thing a few years ago that my daughter, when she was 11, asked me what a diet is. And I don't say a word to her about any of that. And I don't say anything in front of her. We learned that the hard way, because my son, when he was 4, we were in Hawaii and Todd said that Jesse called himself a fat piece of in the mirror. in the hotel mirror. But so then the rest of the night I was trying to get out of him. And then his principal at school said he gets it from my negative self-talk. So I stopped. And then if someone paid me a compliment, I would say, thank you, I'm healthy. And one of Phoebe's friends weighed her when she was younger, and I was furious.
Let's jump into the answer here. So we asked Jeff, you know, how did going to Fat Camp affect you?
It was everything. I think it was very defining for her. Yeah, she wrote a book about it. You know, my parents, my dad, taking care of two kids who were not always easy or horrible, as my mother would call us. I remember that she had obese put on some one of her insurance forms to help save money for something. And you don't, I don't think they really kind of evaluated what the long-term ramifications of that would be. She went to Fat Camp also, and Camp Shane, which I guess they did a documentary on later. You never want your summer camp to be made the subject of a documentary.
So,
nailed it.
Gold star. Yay. For sure.
We're going to move on to what we call the lightning round, where it's just short question, short response.
Okay.
So first question is, who would you thank in your Oscar speech?
Jeff.
Okay. Let's see what Jeff said.
Funny. I mean, I'm sure she'd make a joke and thank like her therapist or whatever nutritionist which she was using to be able to fit to the dress. I think she would thank me. I think she would forget to thank her husband and have to go back. 100%.
Okay, you get a point for that. Yep.
I'm not in therapy.
By the way, in lightning round, points are doubled. You know how that that matters.
Yes.
So here you go. Two gold stars. All right, so next is what's according to Jeff, your pet peeve?
Being touched softly. I don't know that.
Great.
People eating.
I was going to say chewing.
No gold star, but does that still track?
I don't mind people eating. I don't like the sound of my husband eating or
specifically Todd.
Yeah.
Is it a misophonia or is it just a...
Yeah, no, I think it's a misophonia. My daughter has it too.
Yeah.
Got it.
But yeah, no, that's not a pet peeve.
I ate a brownie this whole interview and I'm so sorry.
I didn't even hear it. And honestly, it's just him. I could hear it five rooms away. And my brother's very sensitive to sound too.
What would you say is your theme song?
Oh, Facts of Life.
Jeff?
Facts of Life.
Bam!
Wow!
I love it. Okay, so we asked Jeff, what is Phoebe's birthday? Do you think he got it right or wrong?
No, he would not remember.
Phoebe's birthday is, I think, in August. I don't know. I don't know my kid's birthday, so.
So, ding, ding, ding. You got that right.
Great. And then we asked, do you know when Jeff's youngest birthday is?
Yes.
When
you
is
want
it?
Me to say it?
Yeah.
It is.
Okay.
So confident with the yes.
I do now actually know this now.
Yeah.
Bing, bing, bing. That was so funny. Oh my God, I got it right.
Yes, nailed it.
Okay, Liz, what's your favorite show?
The Odd Couple.
I would say Laverne and Shirley.
Laverne and Shirley. Sorry, you're so wrong about your favorite show. But what's your favorite current show?
I would say, I don't know if you watched it, if we watched it this recently, but I would say The Bear, but maybe Succession, because that was more of the time when.
All right. I'll accept both answers. Let's see what Jeff said.
Probably Succession.
Ooh, bing, bing, bing.
Nice.
Yeah, because we hadn't watched The Bear yet.
What's Jeff's favorite show of all time?
Honeymooners.
Okay. Jeff?
Honeymooners.
Bam.
So sweet.
What's Jeff's favorite current show?
Well, I'll say Succession.
The Bear.
Oh, no. Ooh. I went to The Bear.
Too late.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. That's so funny.
What's a show you hate?
I haven't seen Ted Lasso, but I feel like I hate it.
Anything by Michael Patrick King.
Yeah. And then what happens? That's true. And then that happened or whatever. No, he's right.
Okay. So didn't get it. So this is, we asked him, what's the best gift that you ever gave Jeff?
Moving here.
Oh,
proximity. Let's see what Jeff says.
$200 Apple card. Because we're both addicted to the same game called Fishdom.
Oh, Fishdom. Oh my God. Fishdom. That's right. Damn
well,
it.
Well, don't, I know you didn't get that one, but Liz, you crushed, okay?
I did.
Let's see. You did. You cleaned house. Is that the
Yeah, that's the first time I've cleaned house. No, I've been doing so much cleaning.
14 and a half gold stars. I believe that is our best so far.
That's
so congratulations.
Oh my God.
Before we let you go, just want to get kind of your reflections on hearing Jeff, you know, answer these questions. Like, what's your take on it?
Yeah. First of all, I loved it because I didn't know, first of all, that he would care that much about my things. Like, he seemed very like gusto in the enthusiastic. Oh my God. See, he'd make fun of me. But also the fact that he even considered taking the time to do that. And also the fact that he knew so much about me that I wouldn't have thought he would have known. So, because I always think I'm uninteresting, but he knew more about me than, you know, than like if you had said the word like success, I'd be like, no, I'm not successful. I loved it. I really loved it. The fact that I love this stuff. I love it. Because you don't like you don't do that anymore. Like, see how much you really know about a person. Everything's so like, you know, and I also loved remembering the good parts of our childhood, like the honeymooners and knowing that we still remember things about each other that only we would remember. I loved it. I was thinking during, I was like, I'm going to call him after and be like, we did so well.
What did you learn? I mean, hearing back your perspective and, you know, reminiscing about your childhood, thinking about how you're doing this. Are there any significant takeaways?
It was very validating. First of all, I've never thought he thought I was like that smart. I mean, that's nice. That's hard for me to believe, but
he said it twice.
Impact,
said it twice. We got it twice.
I know. Are you sure he thought it was me? not my dead twin, but the thing about how like the gallows humor and stuff, but also the fact that he knows what an impact being sent to fat camp was, that the whole obesity on my chart, even though I wasn't, just for insurance, like that stuff. I don't know whether or not it's because I said it so much or because he was at the bus stop when my dad said to make sure everybody knows I'm obese, but because it's on my record. But I think that stuff like that shared, it gives me like a warm feeling, that shared childhood and remembering that stuff, and also validating.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so, so much, Liz, for this.
Honestly, I think this is a great show. I think this
is cute.
Honestly, it's amazing. I think it is so, I get such a kick out of it. And I'm such a TV like head and so into like bringing back like the Newlywed Game, like things like that. Like people actually connecting and knowing each other and knowing how much someone else knows about you and people being in touch with their past and their, I think this is an amazing show.
Milana, what did you learn? What was your favorite moment of that? What lovely interview.
First of all, she's so funny and her humor comes so much from her truth. Like the things that she says are just so honest. You can't not laugh at them. But my favorite moment was actually this moment of, I think, really applicable parenting advice. I loved what she said to her daughter about going to work. I just think that's really true, that sometimes you just, first of all, I love the idea of being honest with your kids and not being a martyr in this way, of not saying like, I'm going to fight this battle for our family.
Right.
But also this really feeds me and I need to be fed to be a good mom to you is such a good example to set for your kids. Because I think, I mean, I will not say this enough times on this podcast. My mom is an incredible mom and my grandmother is an incredible grandmother, but there is a lineage of martyrdom in my family of like, we sacrificed for you. And that guilt doesn't make me a better daughter or better person in the world. And actually the model of prioritizing yourself so you could show up better for your family is one that I need to see more of.
So I'll take my second favorite moment, I guess. But I think it's just more the overall theme of like how obviously a rough kind of upbringing they had. And yet they're just these totally resilient human beings who are entirely, you know, at least in terms of capitalistic success or successful, you know, like there was that moment where she talked about like kind of the two roads diverge in the woods moment, you know, where it's like, well, we could have either become drug addicts, or we could have figured out how to find the humor in it and, you know, become TV writers. There was no in between. That really kind of stuck out to me as like, yeah, you know, you're always kind of presented with the choice. There is a moment where the ball is really in your court to decide, like, what are you going to do with this garden? Are you going to, you know, get in there and weed it?
Or are you just going to be like, Grey Gardens, welcome to my home. I am this mess.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just thought it was a real story of resilience, and it was cool to hear it from you know, the perspective of the younger sibling, you know?
And I do think there's something really cool about being like, it's okay if you mess up your kid just a little bit. Like that, like we said, that is just going to happen sometimes in some way, on some topic, on some bad day. And
you're not going to be batting 1,000.
Is that a good number? I don't know baseball. No, okay.
Well, that was a blast. I loved this interview. I love hanging out with you, Milana. I just want to say safe to you, and safe to everyone out there. Your Mom is a podcast is hosted by Milana Weintraub and Sundeep Parikh. It is executive produced by Milana Weintraub, Sundeep Parikh, and Stephen Hine. Editing and sound design is by Sean Marr. Music by Matt Friedman. This podcast comes from F & Funny Productions and Story Mill Media. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at Your Mom is a Podcast.
My Long Island twang.
Hey.
I'm on the podcast.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Say
right
hi.
Now?
Right now, yeah.
Right now.
We did really well, Jeff. We got so many gold stars. I knew you would care if we won. But it was great. It was really nice. And now we get to keep it. I know. You knew a lot more things about myself than I knew. I forgot Laverne and Shirley. But I didn't know when The Bear came out. So I thought you would say Succession too. But everything else, we did pretty well.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So are you playing Fishdom?
Yes, I'm playing Fishdom right now. And it's really, it's the last thing I have that I haven't given up for the strike. Yeah. We're literally buying off-brand dog food.
We're addicted to a game that Jeff invited me to get an extra grenade. All right. I have to let these people go. Jeff, it was really fun. Thank you. I'll talk to you later. Safe. Bye.